Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 8, 2014. Lawmakers from three states of Equatoria boycott the passing of the National Security Bill.
So we in Equatoria, we are almost 105. So only four inside. The rest all because we decided since today, if this thing goes like this, we are not going to go anywhere. So most of the people, they did not even enter, they went home.
And seven people were killed as heavy rains pound villages in eastern Equatoria State.
Most of the fields were destroyed, especially those fields along the river were all destroyed. The maize plantations, the sugarcane plantations, all those plantations and even the vegetables along the river were all washed out.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eastern Equatoria State officials say floods caused by heavy rains have killed at least seven people in Magui County in the last 3 weeks. They say the floods have also washed away some bridges and made roads impassable. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
State Agriculture Minister Ochan John Bongomin, who is from Magui County, says all seven victims died from drowning.
There were some loss of lives. In Pajok, there was one person who got drowned. And I was told around Winkibul, about six people lost their lives. They got drowned.
Bongomin says the rains have also washed away crops such as maize and sorghum, raising the fear of food insecurity in the area.
What transpires was that the maize, mostly the maize which were dried in the fields, which was supposed to be collected and then brought and then dried, got drenched, and most of the fields were destroyed, especially those fields along the river were all destroyed. The maize plantations, the sugarcane plantations, all those plantations, and even the vegetables along the river were all washed out.
Bongomin says officials worry that if the rains continue, there will be widespread hunger.
We were expecting that August and September should have been having heavy rain, but in September and now beginning of October, the rains are very sporadic, so we are fearing that that will affect the second season, which will eventually impact adversely on the availability of food. In other areas like Lapa, there is already hunger because the crops have failed. And if you go to Kapueta, even the Kapuetas, most of the Kapuetas are also affected.
Bongomin says the state government has sent a team to assess the flood damage. He says international aid agencies are also on their way to assess the impact of the floods. On Tuesday, the new top UN official in South Sudan, Ellen Margaret Lois, told the reporters in Juba that flooding is affecting internally displaced people in UNMISS camps in several parts of the country and hindering the work of aid agencies. Lois says UNMISS is making arrangements to relocate some of the IDPs to higher ground.
I have seen for myself, and it is clear that especially the camp in Bentu has problems with the water. Various experts have been there to assist the humanitarian actors in trying to remedy that situation. The camp in Malaka also had challenges in relation to water here during the rainy season.
Loy says a new site has been established in Malakal, which will hopefully diminish the problems caused by massive flooding. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
In another part of eastern Equatoria State, officials say the problem is not flooding, but insecurity. State officials insist calm has returned to Budi County after government soldiers went on a rampage Monday, killing three people and burning several houses in Chukudum. But a member of parliament from the area tells VOA that tension remains high and civilians are still hiding. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has more.
Sabina Dario, Budi County's representative in the National Legislative Assembly, says although the shooting has stopped, many locals are now homeless after Monday's deadly violence and are living in fear.
Understand, one officer was sent yesterday to Chukudum to calm the situation. So he came back this morning to bring his report. He left Chukudum this morning. The houses are burned in Chukudum and are scared. But the good news is that the population, the civil population, did not fire back to the army.
Dario says tensions in the area have been building since Governor Louise Labong appointed Maurice Kaunda Budi County Commissioner in 2012. She says since that time, there have been reports of killings, abductions, intimidation and torture. Dario says in the last week, one young man died under mysterious circumstances and three others were arrested and tortured. She says the commissioner was summoned by MPs from Eastern Equatoria to provide an explanation.
It was that since the commissioner was appointed, there was tension in the area. There has been a lot of killings in May, April and May this year. There were killings in Cape 15, which there was a list submitted that the government should have rescued. Nothing was done, and then the people were killed one by one.
Dario says county authorities have been arresting and harassing a group of young men who the commissioner says attended a meeting he says was a security threat to the county. She says people are scared in light of what happened and are demanding protection before they return to their homes. She also says the governor has been well aware of the problems in Chukudum for some time now.
The governor should actually release the commissioner and allow the people to nominate someone in public to be the one replacing this current commissioner. And we told him we should do it immediately. And also the country should be lifted. So I understand from the officer who visited the area yesterday to calm the situation, he already ordered that the country should not be there.
Dario says she and other MPs will travel to the area to investigate the insecurity in Budi County. SPLA spokesman Philip Aguer says he's aware of the tension in the county and an investigation is underway.
We are waiting a full report of the commander of the force that is in Chukudum. But there is a bit of misunderstanding. We are trying to trace what happened, why was that soldier killed and what happened later on. That needs a full report. But yes, preliminarily there are misunderstandings between the military in the base and one of the areas where this soldier was killed.
Aguer says he expects a full report from the commander within the next few days. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
In Juba, Parliament today passed the much-debated National Security Bill. The bill was passed into law in spite of a boycott by some lawmakers opposed to the legislation. As Philip Thornaleu reports from the capital, many of those who refused to vote on the bill are against a clause which gives security agents the power to arrest suspects without warrant.
Thank you. Thank you.
Members of Parliament passed the National Security Bill in the fourth reading after a sometimes righteous debate that lasted 3 hours. Some lawmakers walked out of the National Assembly in protest at the bill in the middle of the debate. Onyoti Adigo, the leader of SPLM-DC minority in Parliament, is one of the lawmakers who walked out. He had called for the sitting to be adjourned for at least 72 hours to give MPs more time to read amendments that had been attached to the bill. Even though his request is covered by the parliamentary rules of order, it was rejected. Before Adigo left the chamber, he had this to say.
And as the official opposition in this parliament, I requested that this has to be suspended. And the ruling party is saying no, because they have been sitting on it and they know what is happening. We are going to leave the house and you remain discussing. We will not be part of it. Thank you very much.
The official opposition in parliament is made up of only 6 MPs out of 325, so their walkout hardly impact parliamentary proceedings. But shortly after they left the chambers, MPs representing Central, Eastern and Western Equatorial States also walked out in protest. Henry Oduor, a member of the ruling SPLM party who represents Eastern Equatorial State, says he walked out because he feels the bill is being rushed through without thorough debate on some issues. Oduor also says he does not agree with the sweeping powers granted to security officials, such as being able to arrest someone without a warrant.
The speaker decided to bulldoze his way. The opposition raised, but the speaker never listened. I raised as one of the concerned persons, an MP from a region. I represent people, but the speaker again bulldozed. And when you see, there is less than a third of MPs in that house now. and are going to push through a controversial bill to govern this country, I think that leaves a lot to say about which direction this country is going.
Section 51 of the newly passed law allowed security officers to arrest anyone suspected of committing a crime against the state. It also says that anyone who is arrested had to be brought before a magistrate within 24 hours. Oliver Morris, who represents Central Equatorial State, did not join the walkout. He says the protesting MPs do not represent Equatoria as a region. Mori insists the security bill protects the national interest.
Honorable members, we should never allow ourselves to be pulled, to be ganging as counties or states as so. To me, this bill is not a bill where we need to gang ourselves. We are ganging against who? I thought the issues of concern to us will be in the constitution that will be brought. And this is where we may need actually to convince even others that this is a permanent constitution which you are making in process, so let it be accommodated for every one of us in the Republic of South Sudan. But if we start now by division in the security bill, which is supposed to protect all of us, where are we heading? Let everyone ask himself, where are we heading?
The new law does have checks and balance against abuse of power, including a complaint board and a 5-member advisory group. The heads of both bodies will be appointed by President Salva Kiir and must have a legal background of not less than 7 years. The bill that was passed also removes immunity granted to members of the security forces in the previous drafts. Samuel Duharding, the chairman of the Parliamentary Committee for Defense, Security and Public Order, and an author of the bill, says the new law is long overdue. He says it will benefit everyone in South Sudan.
It is actually very good, it's joyful to the people of South Sudan and to the service itself, because from here we will be now assured the work of the service will be running smoothly.
165 out of 325 MPs were in Parliament today for the vote. Out of those, about 20 walk out. President Kiir is widely expected to sign the bill, which is the last step remaining before it becomes the law of the land. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Grace Abalang is a member of parliament representing Eastern Equatorial State in the National Assembly in Juba. She says 101 lawmakers from Equatorial Region are not happy with the National Security Bill. She says the Speaker of the Parliament broke the rules by not giving lawmakers enough time to study the changes made to the bills before calling for a vote.
And we as a region have amendment that we want to see in the original text. But if you see even this original text that they have passed, the amendment is not there. Especially 12, section 50, section 51 is only 52, which talks about the immunity of the members of the service which is deleted. And we in Equatoria, we still have concerns. In 12D, talking about the members of the service will come and seize your property without even any letter from the court. We are saying it no. And also there's a section talking about when you are taken to the extension, you have to feed yourself. We have not found anywhere in the world where somebody is in the detention of the security, not even of the police, where you have to feed yourself. Meanwhile, you are there, your company will wonder even where are you, where will you find money. So we are saying these amendments, we want to see it in the original text. This is what did not happen.
Yes. How many MPs from Equatoria boycotted the sitting today?
So we in Equatorial, we are almost 105. So only four inside. The rest all because we decided since jail, if this thing goes like this, we are not going to go inside. So most of the people, they did not even enter. They went home. So few remain, and then we're inside, and then we stated our statement inside, and then we walked out.
You are telling me the bill was passed today. How is it going to impact with your absence, the MPs from Equatorial?
So this is now the decision of the leadership. We are saying, we have said what we have said. So if the president is going to ascend into this bill, we are part of the region. He's not part of it, so he's even going to divide this country more. So we are saying to our president that he should not ascend to this bill. This bill should be returned back to parliament. We have to put our concern, our amendments that we want to see in the bill, then this bill will be passed.
That's Grace Abalang, a member of parliament who represents Eastern Equatoria State in the National Assembly. She was speaking to me earlier today from Juba. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese health workers are trained on how to detect signs of Ebola. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in what ways are community leaders helpful in resolving conflicts?
For the community leaders, there are many ways they can use to bring peace to the community. First of all, they can conduct the meetings, they can call all the youth. And the second ones, they can investigate the causes of the conflicts. Then after they know the causes of conflict, then they go to the solution.
Those leaders, they just sit and see where the problem is, then they talk to those people who are fighting, who are conflicts, then they solve the problem between them.
They may negotiate between two persons who are disagreeing, yes. They found the source of problem, and after found the source, try to reconcile.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. More than 100 students of Kwajok National Secondary School in Warrap State say they are leaving the school to protest a government announcement that students will take exams based on a new South Sudan national curriculum. For the last 3 years, students have been studying the Sudanese curriculum and were due to sit for university entry exams next March. For VOA News, Santino Munud Ayuel has this report from Kwajok.
Kwajok National Secondary School students arrived at the school compound at 7:30 local time. Last week, education authorities closed the school following a standoff over implementation of South Sudan curriculum, which demands the students who are now in Senior 3 sit in Senior 4 later in 2015. They came here with hope that disagreement which led to the closure of a school a week ago would be reversed. But that was not the case after student representatives met with principal of the school this morning. However, a section of students now in Senior 3 in Kwajok National Secondary School, a marshal out of school saying they do not want Senior 4 system because they are not prepared for it. Kwajok National Secondary School principal, Mayen Jonkor, maintains that the school administration is not an island and would not compromise with national laws for any reason.
As administration, we are following up the system of the country, that is Senior 4 system. Those 130 who have chosen to go out and coach and sit exam, it is up to them and they are allowed to go.
Warrap State Education Minister Victor Atem says South Sudan syllabus were introduced 2 years ago and students are aware of their introduction.
Introduction was fully from Senior 1 to those in Senior 3 now. Our children said, no, we must sit in Senior 3. National policy of education would not work with us. We must sit in Senior 3. We said, no, this is what policy says.
But 20-year-old Kwal Malwai says the students are not aware of Senior 4 syllabus that officials are talking about. He says authorities want to use them as experimental spaces for the so-called South Sudan curriculum.
Syllabus are not there, even protocol are not there, library is not there, and serial number is not there. So what did the evidence show that Senior 4 is there?
Joseph Quad is another student who has refused to go to Senior 4. He is not certain if South Sudan examination for Senior 4 would work out in 2015. He says if South Sudan government wants to implement the new curriculum, then they should not allow other students to sit in Senior 3 and others in Senior 4. He says he doubts if South Sudan has a capacity of setting and conducting two parallel examinations in a single year.
Kwajong National Secondary School only cannot be favored, and that the national government can sit down and set the exam for Kwajong National Secondary School.
At least 130 students have decided to leave Kwajong National Secondary School for other schools in the state or in the neighboring states. The circular issued on 15 last month by National Ministry of Education directing state authorities to phase out any foreign curricula in March next year and implement South Sudan curriculum in the same year is said to have sparked the standoff. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manuda UL in Kwajok, Warab State.
Some news just in, the first Ebola patient diagnosed in the United States has died in Texas. Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital says Thomas Eric Duncan died this morning. Duncan, a Liberian national, was visiting family in Dallas when he became sick and entered the hospital on September 28. He initially went to the facility 3 days earlier, complaining of fever and abdominal pain, but was sent home with antibiotics. The U.S. Center for Disease Control says it is tracking 48 people who had contact with Duncan in the days before he was admitted to the hospital. South Sudan is aware of the danger of Ebola and is preparing health workers to combat the disease. The World Health Organization is helping Warab State officials conduct a four-day training session for health workers on how to identify and manage Ebola cases should the deadly disease reach South Sudan. Health workers say the training should enable them to protect themselves and their communities if an outbreak occurs in their state. For VOA News, Santino Monut reports from Kwajok.
More than 40 health workers from several health facilities across Warab State, six counties, and the disputed Abia region are taking part in the training. Twitch County health care worker Joseph Bia says training has enabled him to identify the signs and symptoms of Ebola.
Someone found with nasal bleeding, skin bleeding, vomiting blood, high fever. Please, don't rush and touch that person. You have to allow that person to come to a health facility whereby we'll get good management.
He says he will share his knowledge with colleagues and community members once he returns home. Madu Samuel, a clinical officer based in Kwajok, says he too has learned vital tips on how to manage Ebola cases. He says he plans to educate this community about deadly disease.
I will tell all my village health committee when I go back that in a case, we should not be rushed to hospital. First, we go and assess, and then we come back.
Deng Akol, World Health Organization chief officer in Warab State, says creating awareness of Ebola is especially important now that suspected cases have surfaced in Democratic Republic of Congo.
We have heard that there are some cases in Congo. Congo is bordering South Sudan, especially Western Equatoria. And also Western Equatoria is bordering Warab State, especially Bumako, Agogo. And now we have invited people from Agogo PHCU to come and attend this workshop to benefit.
A state health ministry official, McQueen Wagner, confirms that so far no cases have been reported in South Sudan.
There is no case at the moment, only to make public awareness, a clinical presentation, sign and symptom.
Ngor says the state health ministry will form Ebola emergency health committees at the county level to conduct Ebola awareness campaigns and report any suspected cases of the disease. This is the second Ebola training session in Warab State in 2 weeks. The first session was held last week. Participants are also being trained on how to manage cases of malaria, meningitis, tuberculosis, antenatal tetanus, and acute diarrhea. For BOA News, I am Santino Manuda Uel in Kwajok, Warab State.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta became the first sitting head of state to appear before the International Criminal Court in Hague today. The Kenyan leader attended a key hearing that may determine whether the crime against humanity case against him is dropped or postponed indefinitely. From Paris, Lisa Brand reports for VOA. The judges are expected to make a decision on the case by the end of the year.
President Uhuru Kenyatta was greeted by cheering supporters outside the courtroom, but he remained silent during the three-hour hearing at the International Criminal Court. Instead, his defense lawyer, Stephen Kay, made a vigorous argument the Kenyan leader be acquitted of the charges against him.
He is entitled to his verdict of not guilty because there are no further inquiries going on. It is plainly not the case that was brought against him that can be sustained at all. And so when I say there is no evidence, I say deliberately there is no evidence, because if there was evidence, we would have a trial.
Mr. Kenyatta faces five counts at the Hague-based court for his alleged role in overseeing post-election violence in Kenya between 2007 and 2008. The unrest killed about 1,100 people and displaced more than 500,000 others. Mr. Kenyatta says he is innocent. His presence Wednesday at the ICC wraps up a two-day status hearing to determine how or whether to proceed with his trial. The defense says the prosecution's case against Mr. Kenyatta has collapsed, but prosecutors argue the Kenyan government has obstructed their efforts to gather evidence to build their case, including Mr. Kenyatta's phone, tax, and banking records. Prosecution lawyer Benjamin Gumpert has called for an indefinite postponement of the case, arguing that scrapping it altogether would set a worrying precedent.
And it would not be in the interests of justice for the court to make a ruling which will effectively be interpreted as the court saying, if a country sticks out for long enough, obstructing proper inquiries being made by the prosecutor, then the case against the person that country wants to protect will go away. And that would be a disastrous interpretation.
The lawyer for the victims of Kenya's violence, Fergal Gaynor, said if the case collapses, the victims will be the biggest losers.
They have lost mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters. They have been repeatedly raped. They have been set alight. They have lost their small businesses in Naivasha and Nakuru. Is it really fair to force them now to pay the price for obstruction of justice by Mr. Kenyatta's government?
Kenya's Attorney General, Githu Muigai, has said the government has done its best to produce material requested by the prosecution, but some of the demands were impossible to meet. The Kenyatta case is seen as a major test for the ICC, which has secured only two convictions since it began operating in 2002. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And that brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Kanda Ya Nini by Papi Tex. We have been listening to that little bit of music by Papi Tex with the song Kanda Ya Nini. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.